Career Curves is pleased to have Groove, maker of the Career Clarity Toolkit, as our sponsor. Are you feeling stuck or trying to figure out what's next in your career? The Career Clarity Toolkit uses design thinking, guided reflection, and career experiments to give you confidence. Go to careercurves.com/groove to get started. As a special promotion for Career Curves listeners, use the discount code CURVES to receive 10% off your first order. We've been planning for the August 1st launch of the Career Curves podcast since the fall of 2018. A few months ago, to test the concept, we interviewed each other. This is one of those tests. We're calling it a hidden episode because we aren't doing anything to market its release. We've posted it to give early adopters like you a better sense of what the Career Curves podcast will be about, and to share the powerful career advice that came out during the interview. I'm Beth Davies, and I'm the host of this interview. My guest is my partner, Dan Henkel. We hope you enjoy this preview episode, and please visit careercurves.com to sign up to be notified of our official launch. It wasn't long ago that people stayed with one company throughout their career. Now, the belief is that you need to change companies to grow in your career. Is this really true, though? Can you have a challenging, fulfilling career while staying with one company? Welcome to Career Curves. On each episode, we talk to someone who has had an interesting, curvy career to find out how they navigated the twists and turns. We focus on the opportunities and challenges that came their way, digging into key decisions they needed to make and how they made them. I'm Beth Davies. Today we're joined by Dan Henkel, who spent the bulk of his career, 25 years, at Gap Inc. Even though he spent a long time at one company, his career was very curvy, moving between roles and departments. At times he moved laterally, and at times he moved up. It's an interesting journey that ultimately took him to the highest levels, including co-chief human resources officer and president of the Gap Foundation. Dan shares how he navigated his career and whether he thinks a journey like his is possible today. Dan, it's great to have you.
Great being here.
So Dan, you and I first met many years ago when we were both working at the Gap in Human Resources. You joined the company as an assistant manager in the benefits department, and I was working on the training team. You ended up spending 25 years at the Gap, which is quite impressive. I think I left after about 6 years. So my first question, 25 years at the Gap, you weren't an assistant manager that whole time, right?
No. In fact, when I came to Gap, I made a decision to actually take a step back. So I was a manager at Oracle and made the decision to really switch careers and switch companies, switch industries that we were in, because I just thought it was a better fit for me.
Okay. So much that I'm curious about. So tell me first what you studied in school and how you made the choice of what you were going to major in as an undergrad.
So I probably would never give the advice to anyone to do what I did.
Oh, that's perfect. That's what I want to hear.
Which is, I studied accounting and general management, and the accounting piece was, why did I study it? With two reasons. One, what I initially went in to study was public relations, and I found out that that paid $14,000 a year upon graduation. So I said, next. And that second piece was, as I was taking all the standard classes, I was taking accounting, and it was just super easy to me. I could do it in my sleep, and I saw that people with accounting degrees got paid well, and it was something I did really well. So, you know, that's how I ended up with an accounting degree.
Yeah, and the general management just came with it, or was that?
So it's interesting that you asked the question, because the general management was a tag on, because as I approached my senior year, I was actually thinking to myself, what have I done? Basically, because I do not want to be, not, there's nothing wrong with being an accountant. It's a great job, but I just knew it wasn't for me. And so the general management, which was really just, it was to try to round myself out a little bit. And I think it was a move that paid off for me, because I was able to pretty quickly transfer out of the financial world after I started at Oracle.
Okay. But when you went to Oracle, your first move was a relatively linear move, right? You went from studying accounting and general management into what role at Oracle?
I was an international financial analyst.
Okay.
And talk about like probably the coolest job you could get at the time, working for, you know, really early days Oracle Corporation. As an international financial analyst, it was actually super cool. We were dealing with countries throughout the world, but it just wasn't the kind of work that I wanted to do.
How did you know that?
You know, it's I think what I really discovered was what I loved about, even as an international financial analyst, was the working with people. And that sounds, you know, cliche, but I liked kind of collaborating, working with people, solving problems, that kind of thing. But what I was finding is a lot of that work was probably more like 10% or 20% of the day, and the rest of it was crunching numbers. And so I was kind of saying to myself, so I need to pivot out and actually get into one of those jobs that is more people forward 80% of the day.
And then you were able to, within Oracle, make a move.
Yeah.
So tell me about that move and how you made it.
And again, like my career advice is for anyone is sort of don't do what I did. And because I wasn't incredibly intentional with my decision making early on. And the reason I say that is that I was sent on a recruiting trip because we were growing so quickly.
And you were still in finance.
I was still in finance. Uh-huh. And so I was trying to find other financial folks. Oracle ended up hiring all of the people that I recommended. And the head of human resources basically said, hey, you know, you're really good at this. Do you want to join the recruiting team? And literally, I probably didn't hesitate even 5 seconds. I was like, yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. And that's how I transferred into HR.
Oh, I love that. So when you were in finance and thinking that you wanted to flip the percentages and spend more time with people, had you at that point even been considering recruiting?
Absolutely no idea. So some of this is, you know, with careers in general, some of it is it's opportunistic, right? You start to explore different areas, you become involved in different projects or, you know, organizations or whatever the case may be. And this was just a case where I did what I was supposed to do. They sent me on a recruiting trip. I went. I said, this is so much fun. And literally I was saying to myself, people get paid to do this job. You know, that's how much fun I had going out and attracting new kids to come in and apply to Oracle.
Some people, when they have that opportunity that comes, even though it's inside their own company, they question whether or not to take the opportunity because they don't want to disappoint their current boss or step away from their current team. How did you manage that?
So a couple things happened. Because the company was expanding so dramatically, we needed a tremendous amount of support in recruiting. And so my boss at the time said, okay, so we're going to have now one of our guys in recruiting who actually really understands what we need. And I would rather have Dan go over there who kind of gets what we're trying to find. And in fact, we sent him out on this trip and he was successful. And so that helped. And then I established enough of a relationship with sort of our management team, including up to the CFO. And so when the head of HR talked to the head of finance, and they said, this is just the right move for Dan for a million different reasons, but it's clearly something he's passionate about, that helped it happen at the end of the day. But I would say just a piece of advice for people is just, throughout my career, I've spent time building relationships and building networks within a company. And I think I can remember back to the day feeling good that I had established relationships, not close relationships, but all the way up to including the CFO at the time, so that when my name came up for this opportunity, it didn't get dismissed out of hand.
I was going to call out the same thing, which is that you mentioned that you didn't do this intentionally or you didn't find the move intentionally. And yet, as you tell the story, what I'm hearing is some very intentional actions, like intentionally building relationships and having people know you, and so that when this came up, they weren't saying, wait, Dan, who? Oh, wait, isn't he just our finance guy. Wait, what? Yeah. And so that you had some capital with the decision makers.
One of the things that I did throughout my career that it is advice that I do pass along that I think can be helpful is I tell people every single year you should pick three people in the organization or outside of the organization that you're not currently in relationship with that you want to build a relationship with. And it really can be anyone in the organization. And then be intentional about how to build those relationships. And in the course of a year, you can form three new relationships. It's not that big of an ask. But you think about that, if you did that and you were intentional about it throughout your career, you really develop quite a network.
That's phenomenal advice because it is, to your point, so doable. I wish I'd gotten that advice early in my career. I love that. Thank you for that. So at some point, I think it was about 4 years into your time at Oracle, you decided it was time to leave Oracle. How did that happen? Because as you said, Oracle was a new company, a fast-growing company, a highly successful company. They still are a highly successful company. And it's the kind of company that some people would say, and maybe they even said it to you, how can you even think about leaving them? Tell me what happened. What drew you away from Oracle into the Gap?
Because I was there early enough in the company's history, after 4.5 years, I had been there longer than 95% of the people of the company. So it sounds like...
So at 26 years old, you were an old
man. Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it sounds like a short period of time, but if you were working for Oracle back in the day... That was a tenured amount of time. And I would say that a lot of people I know now in the tech field, when they're with a certain company for 3 or 4 years, that actually seems like a good amount of time. And it felt like a good amount of time. I felt like I did, you know, that sector, I really got to understand the business. And quite frankly, we were just, the expansion was just, it was just crazy. And it was fun. But I was a little bit fried, and I actually had this thought that was like, oh my gosh, I am 26 years old, and I'm gonna be a 26 year old burnout, basically. Like I'm just gonna burn out, and then what, you know? And I really needed to. It's probably the first time in my life I had to say, okay, do I really want to be doing the 80 hours a week for the rest of my life? And I'm very ambitious, but at the same time, you have to start to think about the sustainability of your career. Right. And so I was doing work that I liked. I certainly have a lot of respect for Oracle, but I had to kind of take inventory of where my life was at that point in time. And then Gap called. It was a cold call, literally just sitting at my desk, got a call from a recruiter from Gap. They had a position. And I looked into the company and fell head over heels in love with it.
What was it that you were seeing about the Gap that caused you to fall in love with it and maybe that you weren't seeing at that time at Oracle?
Yeah, and I think I'll answer this by saying I this isn't a one's better than the other. It's just what's the best fit for you. And one of the things that I always loved about Gap was it's focus on values and I'm very, very focused on sort of, you know, is it a company whose values and mission and drive sort of all sort of, you know, are they aligned with the way that I like to do business? What I loved about the culture was it didn't matter if you were a man or a woman or your race or your sexual orientation or whatever the case may be. It really mattered what you brought to the table. And I just instantly felt that. And I knew that I had sort of found that sort of hand in glove kind of company.
As you're talking about values, did you recognize while you were at Oracle that you were a bit, say, misaligned or a fish out of water? Or was it only when you started the interview process and it felt more like a glove? I'm trying to understand how you get in touch with your own values as you're in the job hunt.
What I was thinking about it at the time, I felt like it's really important to me that I feel like I'm being personally valued and personally invested in. And so that it's Dan Henkel, and not that I have to be the star of the show, but that you, Dan Henkel, the individual, matter to us, and we're going to invest in you and nurture you and help you grow and develop and so on and so forth. And I was feeling a little bit more like a cog. And again, this is not heavy criticism. It's just that it wasn't Dan Henkel. It was more like, okay, this body of work needs to get done, and I'm going to just push that work forward. And that's a real different sense of feeling and accomplishment than when you're in an organization where they're celebrating with you every step of the way as well.
Right. I get that now. Okay. And so when you were starting at the Gap and even interviewing, and you could start to see the honoring all the differences and the individuals, you started to feel perhaps there that this is a place where the individuals are mattering, not just them as cogs.
Yeah. And Beth, you know, you worked there too.
I loved it.
And you loved it. And so people felt such affinity for the company. And it turns out that it really, when I look back on it, wasn't really a burnout thing. It was probably more this, right? Because I was working really hard when I went to Gap. Like, and as you know, Beth, in the 90s, things were crazy.
Oh, we Gap was on fire.
Absolutely,
we were working
on fire.
Like crazy.
It was just a crazy, crazy time. So it wasn't that. It was sort of like working lots of hours, but loving every minute of the day and feeling like we were sort of in it together and winning together and that kind of thing.
That's very cool.
Really drove me.
So when you went to the Gap, you actually, and I think you started to say some of this when you started, you actually took a step back, at least by title.
Yeah.
Tell me about that decision. Why did you decide that it was okay to go from, I think at Oracle now you had a manager title?
Manager, yeah.
And you were stepping to an assistant manager.
Yes.
Title. Why did that feel okay to you?
You know, this is one of the things I would say to so many people. I feel like we're so title driven. Human beings, we're title driven. And it's just, how do I get to that next step, the next step, the next step, the next step? And this is something I've heard you say too, is just kind of, how do you do that inventory and saying, you know, here's what's working for me, here's what's not working for me. Now let's compare that to this other opportunity. At Gap, they knew that in order to take this job, I'd have to take a step back. But the hiring manager said, Dan, I will promise you this. If you perform at the level that we think you're going to perform at, we will promote you to manager in 6 months. And so I had sort of that feeling like I'll get back on track pretty quickly. And I'm signing up for a culture that's a better fit for me and so on and so forth. And interestingly enough, I took a step back and they paid me more, which was sort of interesting too.
Yeah.
Right. And so the title is only worth so much. And then you have to look at all these other things. The other thing that I'd say, it's 6 months to the day they promoted me to manager. So the promise was kept, and it ended up being obviously a great choice for me.
So I want to stay on this just for one more moment, because you mentioned just now that the role actually paid more, but the title was less. So now what you had to deal with was the optics of others, whether it was, you know, anybody important to you in your life. I don't know who that would be for you, your parents, a mentor. But did you have others fixated on the title and questioning and challenging you on that? And if so, how did you respond?
It's so interesting that you mention it, Beth, because I honestly, looking back, don't think I gave it much thought at all. However, I almost can guarantee you that 15 years later, I would have been much more focused on that. And so why does that happen?
Mm.
You know? And I was okay later in my career taking lateral moves. Absolutely took many of those. But the idea of taking a step back, I don't know, it probably would have been a bigger deal to me later in my career, and it probably shouldn't have been a bigger deal.
Yeah, interesting. So take me through your journey at the Gap. Like, let's just real quickly tell me what the path was.
Sure.
And then we'll figure out some spots that we want to dig into a little bit more. But so you came in as an assistant manager in benefits, and what happened then?
Did a variety of different HR jobs. I ended up being the first HR generalist at Gap. So they threw me into the Gap brand, and people in the Gap brand didn't know what to do with an HR generalist. And so that was a ton of fun. And one of the jobs that I had in the first 9 years in HR at Gap, I was supporting the chief administrative officer, and a job opened in our global responsibility department, and that was the team that was really looking at workplace conditions in the facilities that we placed production in, so factories throughout the world that we didn't own. And she knew my temperament, she knew my style, so on and so forth, and she said, I think Dan would be good for that job. And completely, it was not in the HR orbit.
And what level in HR were you, had you reached before?
I had reached vice president.
Okay, so you've worked your way up in HR, you're a vice president in HR, and 9 years in, somebody comes up and says, I think you've got the temperament for the vice this global president. Responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a lateral move. And literally, before she even finished the sentence, I knew it was the right job for me. I just said, yes. And again, you know, you and I have talked about imposter syndrome, I jumped in, you know, very enthusiastic, and you kind of go through that enthusiastic beginner stage, and then you get into it a little bit of a disillusion stage.
Yeah, and panic.
And it absolutely happened to me where the first really tough issue we were dealing with it was a factory in Indonesia. And I remember saying to myself, what am I doing in this job? What am I going to do?
Now, yeah, because some people I think would assume that to step into a VP of social responsibility role, you would have actually needed to go way back and work yourself up. So how is it that lateral moves can be made? Like, how did you orchestrate that? And how did you even overcome that both lack of your knowledge and also that feeling of imposter syndrome? What did you do?
You know, it's really interesting. And I tell this story a lot because I think people oftentimes don't give themselves credit for all of the experiences they've had up to a certain point. So when I had this situation where we were in this really tricky situation, I literally stopped and I said, okay, we're talking about a workplace situation in Indonesia. So it's very different than dealing with a workplace situation in one of our stores. Okay, it's very different. But I did this kind of crazy thing and I said, okay, what if that crazy thing that happened over in Indonesia, what if that did happen in one of our stores? What would I do? And I was like, well, okay, I can answer that question. I would go through this protocol. And then I started to say, why is it different? If this is how we treat employees in our stores, why wouldn't that same kind of thinking apply to, what our expectations should be in factories that we place production in? And then that was just sort of a turning point. And then I brought in a lot of that learning and actually then imparted that learning on my team and say, let's not think about this as us and them. Let's think about this as how do you improve working conditions
for human beings,
yeah. For people. Yeah. It doesn't matter if there are employees are employees of a factory in Indonesia. And that was just like a light bulb went on and it just clicked. And I was like, oh my gosh, these jobs have lots of differences. And we were in, Gap was in, I don't know, over 50 countries at the time. And so dealing with just all these different cultural contexts and that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, if you just really boil it down to the essential, what are we doing? Are we just trying to improve the lives of someone, whether it be in a factory or in a store? And if you use those same values that I talked about, then that will be a good guide for you.
Yeah, so it's your values, it's your problem-solving skills, it's trusting yourself and all that you've already learned. What about relationships?
It's so funny, I'm laughing because that's exactly what I was just thinking about, is that the other thing you really learn is you actually don't have to know it all. You actually just, you have to have a good network. You have to have a good team. But I drew upon so many relationships I had formed across all these different organizations, whether it was communications or supply chain or government affairs, whatever. And instead of saying, okay, I have to figure all of this complexity out on my own, how do I bring in the best thinkers? And inside the company and outside of the company, tremendous thinking outside of the company, and bring these folks then around the table almost as your sort of mini kitchen cabinet and say, okay, these are the folks that are going to guide me. So when I'm stuck, I don't have to have all the answers. I just need to have the right network.
Some people worry at those moments that they're going to look foolish or look incompetent or dumb if they don't have the answers. And, you know, we've heard that expression, fake it till you make it,
yeah.
Which is quite the opposite of what you're saying, which is you're almost saying, let me lean into the fact that I don't know it and have a network. How did you make it that you would feel okay about not having all the answers?
So I would say this is really interesting because I think I wish it was something that people would learn faster in their careers. But just think about anytime you ask, so if I said, hey, this isn't my core area of strength, Beth, you are really good at this.
Oh, I'll help you. How do you need my help?
And so people are like, people love to help. They love to offer their advice, their wisdom, their counsel. They do. I love to do it if I have expertise that others don't have. And you start to say that actually makes people actually believe in you more because people want to know that as a human being, you realize that you don't know everything. You cannot have every single strength. And so if you recognize, if you're super self-aware, you know, here's what I actually do pretty darn well. And then here are the areas where I need lots of support around me. And then lean on those folks and make sure that they feel very valued for what they're bringing to the table. I think that's what it's all about.
Nice. Now, at some point, you went back to HR. Is that right?
Or yeah. So this is another thing that I would say career-wise, what's interesting, if you look at the different changes that I've made, a lot of it came about because of things like executive changes. So like there's a new senior leader or a vacancy opens up and they have a great need. So what happened was there were several vacancies in our human resources organization and they needed to fill some of those holes. And so there was an idea, hey, what about Dan moving into sort of a hybrid role and keeping his global responsibility world and then picking up some of these big HR functions. And so I did this hybrid role for a few years and then moved back into doing HR 100% of the time. And again, it was all great. I called HR and this global responsibility kind of my twin passion. So doing both at the same time was great, although a little bit daunting. Again, a lot of it came about because of change. And I would tell people that oftentimes people will come to me and they'll say, oh my gosh, things are going, you know, are so crazy at my company because of all these changes and six people left and this and that, the other thing. And I'll always say, that's perfect. You know, it's like my gosh, yeah, things are a little bit chaotic right now and things are in turmoil. What a great opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, kind of get in there and actually show how you can help and add value. And
show your resilience.
Absolutely.
Show that you can get in there, add value. Take it as an opportunity to learn something new for yourself.
All of those.
I know, as you're telling me all this, I'm thinking that it could be easy for somebody to think, gosh, 25 years at one company, wouldn't that be boring? But I don't think there's anything in your story that is a period of boredom. It's
no.
Like, yeah.
And I really give credit to, I had great bosses while I was at Gap. That makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, the difference between a good boss and a bad boss is a deal maker or a breaker, right? And one of the things I always said is that my bosses tended to be 6 months ahead of me. And what I mean by that is they would see me kind of getting into a coasting zone. And you know, sometimes after you're working hard, it's kind of fun to get into a little bit of a coast, like, hey, I got this, you know. But they sort of knew that if I got bored, they weren't going to hang on to me. So they'd be like, okay, he's getting into that coasting zone. And now it's time to throw another wrench in things and actually pick them up and move them somewhere else. And so that kept things really fresh.
So this is really interesting because it's a similar pattern to what you described at Oracle. So you described at Oracle that you'd been there for a while and that you were starting to feel burnout and were a little bit worried that if you didn't make the move at the time, that you actually would get too burnt out. And so I'm imagining in my head, you know, a typical bell curve. And it's like, oh, wait, you're on the downside of the bell curve and you pulled yourself out. And now you're sharing how when you were at Gap, there were other people who basically had their eye on that same kind of a curve for you and were saying, you may think you're coasting right now, but if we leave you there too long, you're going to get burnt out. And so we're going to pull you out faster. So it's just interesting to notice that pattern for you.
And it does point to, if you have people who are in the organization that are sponsors or mentors, they can make all the world of difference, right? If they're keeping an eye out on you and saying, hey, you know, Beth's been in that position for a little bit too long. We need to pull her out of there.
Yeah.
They know you maybe a little bit better than you know yourself.
And they know you again because of the relationship that you've been building with them.
For sure.
Now, another reason I know people don't stay with a company for a while is fear of missing out or the bright, shiny object or the grass is always greener. Did you have times during your 25 years at Gap where you saw people you had worked with who had gone on other places, had made whatever careers, and did you look at it ever and wonder to yourself, why didn't I leave or should I have left? Or you know, tell me about periods of doubt and how you got through them.
Yeah, and this is another thing I encourage people to do. And some bosses would say this is crazy advice, but go out and look at other opportunities. And you can even be in sort of a happy place. But
so you would interview periodically?
Absolutely. So I would say in a weird way, it just happened to be like every 5 years, you know. So I would go through these little patches like, okay, I've hit, now it's 10 years with the company, now it's 15 years with the company. And I would do a full-on, let's see what's out there. And what, again, what that does then is you can, again, go back to that inventory, right? It's the pluses and minuses. What do I love about working here? What are the things I'd love to change? And then you start to see, okay, if I left, this is the kind of role that I could get. And life does exist outside of a company. Like, so I always would say, like, you know, you can land somewhere else. And so I can answer that question. I could land somewhere else. But then that job's still not measuring up to what I have right now and what Gap has invested in me and what I've invested in Gap. And so I decided to stay.
Yeah, I love it. And it oftentimes can be a really good idea to re-accept the job.
Yes.
And basically say, you know something? Yeah, this is what I want to do. I'm in it and this is still right for me, as opposed to I'm just coasting or just going through it. Now, there did come a time, though, that you did decide to leave the Gap. What led you ultimately to leaving? Tell me about that decision.
So 25 years at Gap, almost 5 years at Oracle. So 30 years in the corporate world. And I always tell people, whenever they ask me that question, I just say 30 years in the corporate world, and people will say, okay, that's
exactly, you know, exactly. Got it.
And again, you know, it doesn't matter what company you're working for. That's a lot of time to be investing, mm-hmm. in that sort of part of your life. And so I was just really intrigued about the possibility of getting out and just doing different things, you know.
And so what are you doing now?
So I have my own little consulting firm. I'm working with two fabulous colleagues on a new Career Curves podcast.
I think I've heard of that one.
With Beth Davies as the host. I'm doing some really, really cool things that, quite frankly, there's no way in the world I could have experimented with if I would have stayed in one of these kind of jobs.
So whether it's your kids or anybody else, if somebody were asking today, do you think it's possible today to build a long career with a single company? What advice would you give?
I think it's trickier today because it's so not the norm, certainly not in the Bay Area. It still happens at some companies. Mm-hmm. But I think what you have to do is you have to really think about almost treating it like you, in fact, are switching jobs, but staying within the same company. So don't go onto this glide path and just go like incrementally, step by step by step by step. Keep things interesting. Keep things fresh. Keep keep growing, keep learning, keep stretching yourself, that kind of thing. How do you put your, I had a boss who said, at any point in time, there should be something that has you on the edge of terror. Something that you're doing has you on the edge of terror. And that sounds horrible, but
right.
But in fact,
I'm like, it seems a bit extreme. Yeah, but okay.
But I actually think there's something to that, like something that sort of makes you nervous or scared because it's
there's something
you
about
done.
Being uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like learning comes from being uncomfortable. Challenging yourself comes from being uncomfortable.
And wouldn't you say, Beth, that it's true that I would say, for me personally, if I ever am in kind of that coasting mode, that is when I become anxious. It's meaning that I feel like I'm not getting everything out of myself that's there. I'm not testing myself and stretching myself enough.
Yeah, it just causes you to go, is this it?
Exactly.
I'm not ready to be done.
Yeah.
So is this it?
Yeah.
Dan, I've known you now, like we've said, for 25 years. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and I've enjoyed every minute of this conversation. So thank you. Thank you for sharing your career. And for anybody who's listening, all of you listening, I invite you to join our conversation. If you go to careercurves.com, you can find not only the episode, but a space for you to comment and join the conversation. So thank you, Dan, and thank you, everybody. Beth.